Blog Talk Radio.
Boy, look at me in my face. Tell me that you're not just a... Please, one, can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi. Welcome, everyone.
Hi, guys.
Thank you for tuning in. So the truth is, we apologize about the missed shows. We had some internet problems. Well, I did since I'm in the country, so we kind of dropped the ball. We apologize for that. We want this to be an outlet for you guys to be able to listen in and, you know, get some things off your chest and have a little laugh. So we want to be dependable. Are you there?
So we welcome you all back. Welcome you back.
Thanks for you guys' support. So I don't know if this is your first time tuning in or not. I wanted to give you a little background on why we decided to make this show. Of course, if you're on any type of social media, you know that every time you go on or log on, they're always portraying Black people in our community in a negative way. So we took it upon ourselves, since we can't depend on anyone but ourselves, to be a positive outlet, a positive spotlight, you know, for ourselves and our community and our children.
Right. We are the media in this century, in this time and age. We are the media. So because we have access to whomever, we're able to make the news what we want it to be, what we feel like is important. So today we wanted to talk about white privilege and its impact on Black lives.
And it does exist.
Yes, and during these times, we know, everybody knows, there's so much going on and so many things are racially charged. And it's frustrating for people of color to always hear our events or our experiences or our traumas to be minimized in the way that they are a lot of times. Oftentimes people minimize the things that happen to Black people as if they're deserving, when we know that if some of these same things were to happen to people of different color, they would be talked about in a different manner, people wouldn't be judged or blamed in the way that things happen with us, and people would be able to be a little bit more empathetic. But when things happen to Black people, you know, people, oh, they shouldn't have been, or people don't want to often acknowledge that these things happen specifically because these people are of a different shade. So today we kind of want to talk about this thing called white privilege and how it's really affecting us every day now. It's like every day you turn on something, the news, and you hear things that are happening to people of color that are really traumatizing to us. And not only talk about those things, but like, what do we do? How do we keep ourselves sane? Because like Charity and I was talking, it's like it's emotionally draining at this point. You're exhausted to hear these things happening to our people when it seems like nothing is being done about it.
And definitely now we have more opportunities than we did before. We have access to things that we never had before, like Keislin previously said, like social media, Facebook, Twitter, you know, whatever your outlet is, if you know someone who works in music or radio. We want to take more of a hands-on and control of our own situations, our own destiny, instead of just sitting back, watching the news or allowing them to portray us in a negative way. And we're going to have to bust this white privilege wide open. It's going to have to be on our shoulders.
Right. So just the term white privilege, just to give an idea, let's all be on the same page, you know, it's a term that's used for privileges in society that benefit white people in our culture, beyond what's commonly experienced by non-white people under the same social, political, and economic circumstances. So, you know, things happen. There's little ways that white privilege is inactivated in all of our lives, and then there's bigger ways, like things that are happening, you know, politically and institutionally with, you know, universities, college, police systems. So it's everywhere, and sometimes some people have a hard time seeing it, and some of us don't have a hard time seeing it. We see it every day. All day, really.
Definitely. And then we have a lot of people who see it and they just don't want to admit it, or, you know, they want to be in denial. You know, people want to live in their comfortable little bubble, but it's time to bust that open. I mean, in order for things to change, you must first admit that there's a problem. And if you can't admit there's a problem, then you can't fix it. You can't begin to heal. You can't say, oh, well, I need counseling. Let me know what I need to do to fix this, if you don't even admit or acknowledge that it does exist.
Right. And that's the problem. I think a lot of people know that there's white privilege, but I think white people often don't want to acknowledge it because it's benefiting them. It's hard to see. You know, like, if I just give a random example, if you're somebody's favorite child and all the siblings are like, your mom's favorite or your dad's favorite, you're like, no, I'm not, because you're the favorite. You don't see that. You don't experience the same things that the other people can see as not being the favorite. So I think that's why white privilege sometimes is denounced by people, because they want to say, oh, no, that was in the 60s or the 50s. But those people who were in the 60s or the 50s, okay, they're still alive, a lot of them, and a lot of them are in positions of power, like judges, police officers, attorneys. So let's not be dumbed down, and let's not be blind about what's happening in our world.
And I kind of want to touch bases on this, because every time I talk to someone about this situation that has the same skin color as me, you know, they always want to bring up, well, you know, black people are doing this, black people are committing crimes, you know, which is all true. Every race has someone that is doing something wrong and is committing a crime. We in no way want to make excuses for them. Of course, they should be punished for their action if they do this. But let's leave that up to, you know, all the avenues that always portray us in a negative way. Let's only portray us in a positive way. Let's build each other up. You know, let's help each other out. You know, we don't need to always shine a light on what a person is doing wrong. I was reading in an article one time in Africa, when a person did something wrong, the community would get together and tell them about all the things that they did right, to remind them, mm-hmm. to help them to make better choices. So we don't always have to be lashing out and saying, oh, you did this wrong. Oh, you did. Okay, the person knows that. We know that. But we don't have to keep beating them upside the head with it. I mean, because once you keep saying, just like with a child, if you keep telling them, oh, you're a bad child, or, you know, you never can do right, you know, eventually that person becomes to believe in what you're saying.
Absolutely. So, again, we need to motivate, encourage each other, and uplift each other, and find out ways, like Carrie is saying, it's basically combating the negative with a positive, you know.
Definitely.
You hear some negative, you don't talk about that. You talk about something else positive that happened or that's going on, and especially for your children. That works definitely with them as well.
So I wanted to kind of, like, give some examples of, like, different shows that I have seen that exercise white privilege, like what's the show, 19 Kids and Counting. They're praising a family with a whole lot of kids. But if it was a black person with that many kids, you know, she would be called out of her name. She would be saying she's a deadbeat. Oh, we don't want her. We don't have to take care of all these kids, have them on welfare. You know, we don't want her taking advantage of our taxpayers' money. Also, another show is where's my list? I can't find my list. Do you know of any more shows? I'm sorry, I don't have my list right in front of me.
Well, I think one thing that happened a while ago that was really, like, prominent to me was white individuals started a hashtag called Criming While White. And this was in response to, you know, it's been so many awful things done to black people in the justice system, really, so I can't speak to which one it was. It was either Eric Garner or either the one before that, Michael Brown, I believe. So white people, which this is a good thing, we need our white people who agree and acknowledge what's going on to be supportive of, you know, of our struggle. So they start hashtagging criming, C-R-I-M-I-N-G, while white. And basically what people were doing is describing that when they were younger and they were white, they committed a crime. It may not be anything huge, but they were giving examples of how they were given the benefit of the doubt to just leave the scene. So one guy said he was driving home one night, and you guys can all Google the hashtag criming while white, and you can read tons of the stories. But he had a story that basically stated that he was driving intoxicated. He was a white young man. The police officers pulled him over, and once they found out that he was under the influence, they talked to him, and they told him that they would be taking him to jail, but they allowed him to make a stop at the ATM to withdraw money for his bail. They told him how much it would be, And they told him, they followed him, you hear me, to the ATM, let him send out the money, and then proceeded to take him in for the arrest of the DUI and let him go once he posted his own bail. Another young man had hashtag CrimeNYY, and he stated that what had happened to him was that he was with some black friends, about two black friends, and they were doing something silly, something childish, not even anything big. You know, I'm going to say trespassing, or maybe they shoplifted, you know, in a convenience store. Well, he was separated from them too, the two black friends of his. His parents were called. They came to pick him up. They were released to the parents while these two black gentlemen were arrested and taken down. Their parents weren't even called. So these are just some examples of white privilege, things that they don't do. They didn't do anything to get this. That's why sometimes they have a hard time acknowledging. But simply because they're white, they're treated in a different, or I say different rules apply to them. And this
definitely
is sad.
Definitely. And to elaborate on this, you know, of course you have to go back in history where black people were slaves and, you know, white people owned black people as like, just like they would a car or a house or an animal. And pretty much everything that was built, heck, we even took care of their children, we nurtured them, we raised them up, was on the backs of black people. And they didn't pay us wages. What they would do was just give us room and board, barely room and board, and just enough to keep us working. So now you fast forward to today, they are exercising their privilege off of what their great-great-grandfathers and grandmothers used us to build. Now, of course, they may not have had anything to do with it, but they're living off of it. They're excelling off of it. They're riding it. They're coasting the wave.
Absolutely. And, you know, Hillary Clinton just made a speech a couple of days ago where she said, which I don't know how she would do this, but she made a statement about she wants to denounce white privilege. You know, again, people don't like to acknowledge, but it is what it is, and it is there. And today, you know, especially the last 2 weeks, I'm seeing it how it's affecting our lives in a magnitude way. Particularly the last couple videos that many of us may have seen on YouTube or the internet, with you know the pool party incident with the young black girls and the officers, and then it was another pool. It wasn't a pool party, but it was a pool event in Ohio where they also, you know, they were mishandling black youth basically. And so this is just so, you know, when you look at these videos, that's why it's hard to look at, and sometimes we're going to talk about that in the later half, how do we protect ourselves and try to contain all these emotions when we see these things that are so disturbing. But you see this, and it's really hard to understand, and you look at these little girls or the boys and say, if they were white, there's no way they would be treating this person like this. I mean, on the second video, Charity, I don't know if you saw it, but it was last week at this pool in Ohio. It wasn't the Houston one, the Texas one. And a random guy came up and got involved and was, like, choking one of the youths while the police was trying to mace. It was three police officers and three girls. I was like, why does it take all this? Why
does it take all this?
I don't get it.
I mean, how would they allow just a pedestrian to just get involved in mauling or apprehending a young black person? Now, in no way, if that young lady was white, could her black person have ran up and tried to help them arrest a young white girl, especially without her clothes on. She only had on panties and a bra, or bikini, or whatever you want to call it. I always hear people saying, well, they were breaking the law. They were somewhere that they weren't supposed to be in. You know, they want to make every excuse possible. Okay, if all those things was true, then yes, they are not wrong. But a police officer is supposed to uphold the law, not break the law to uphold it. Police officers have a certain guideline and rules that they are supposed to go by. And if you have to break the law to uphold the law, you are no better than the criminal.
Absolutely. Oh, my goodness. Absolutely. It's frustrating. And, you know, even when they say, oh, well, they shouldn't have been or they shouldn't resist, people have to understand where these teenagers are coming from, too, nowadays. They're seeing people being shot down for no reason by police officers. Police officers are not a sign of safety anymore for not just young black people, but many of us. We are citizens, and we do not feel protected at all by our police. We're nervous. We're afraid. We're frightened. We're watching them. Oh, they're behind me. Oh, shit. What are they going to do? You never know nowadays. So you cannot blame a teenager for these days a black teenager for being afraid when an officer tries to apprehend them when they have not been doing anything. That's the other thing. They have done nothing wrong. So, you know, we have to now, you know, it's unfortunate, but we have to train our children on how to react to these situations and how to keep themselves safe and protected from the police. This is crazy.
And another thing, too, people don't seem to know the difference between exercising your rights or resisting arrest. You have the right to ask why you're being arrested. You have the right to ask why you're being questioned. You have the right to ask why you're being stopped, because a police officer can't just stop you for no reason. He has to either see you doing a crime or suspect you of doing a crime. So if you ask him, why am I being questioned, or why, you have that right. In the Miranda right, it says you have the right to remain silent, but if you don't, you have the right to an attorney. I don't know the whole Miranda rights, but you do have rights. And you don't have to talk to a police officer if you don't want to. You don't have to ask their question. It does not mean you're resisting arrest either.
Right. And I don't know if you guys saw another post that was on, and it said it was basically showing the two ways that Eric Gardner was detained for selling cigarettes illegally on the corner. And this guy's name that I'm not going to even say in value, but the insane man who shot up the church people, how they both were arrested. If you just take a look at those pictures, those speak volumes. This Eric Gardner was pushed and shoved on the floor and killed ultimately, and this man was in a respectful way detained when he had just murdered 8 or 9 people. I'm confused. I'm confused, and I'm so angry every time I even think about it.
And then, in an argument, a person would say, well, the young man that shot 9 people at church, he didn't talk back. He went quietly. Okay, if you have not broken the law, you don't have to go quietly. You can exercise your rights to speak, to question, because you can question law enforcement if they are doing something wrong. Have you ever heard of a citizen's arrest? I mean, every time I turn around, I want to hear somebody, I hear someone speaking against what the black person has the right to do versus what the police officer has the right to do. Okay, both of them have equal rights. But society want to make it seem like if you're black, you don't have any rights. Just shut up, go along, keep your mouth quiet. Okay, we have done it enough. When black people were slaves, they kept their mouth quiet. They did what they were told. They did everything that people are saying that you should do now, and they were still killed. They were still hung. They were still burned to death. Their women were still raped. Their children were still killed. So, no, you can't just go down quietly. I mean, in my opinion, if you are going to lose your life, at least go down defending yourself. Because if a person has hate in their heart, if a person has hate in their heart and they want to kill you, no matter what you do, no matter what you wear, no matter what you say, no matter what your body language is, that's what's going to happen.
Yeah, there's nothing you can do about it. And that's the part that's scary, and that's why it's important that we acknowledge what's happening, because if we don't talk about it, then it doesn't exist, and that's how the world goes. If we don't make a big deal out of things, just like in Baltimore, had we not made a big deal, and I know the means that the attention got, the way that they got the attention may have been negative, but that prosecutor is prosecuting those officers because of the uproar. If they would have been quiet and just, oh, okay, well, maybe he shouldn't have, then we wouldn't be where we are. That lady's investigated to the fullest extent, and trust me, people will be prosecuted because of the attention that Baltimore brought to the nation. You know, the same thing with the march on Washington. Like, I mean, the march in Alabama, had that not been televised, where people saw how African Americans were being treated by the police officer, it wasn't media like that. So nobody knew. You heard about it, but you didn't know until you saw that happening on that bridge. So it's like, we have to talk about it. We have to acknowledge what's happening, and we can't just go quietly. Like Charity says, I see people on Facebook posting, well, you know, you got to, when the police come, you got to bow your head and da-da-da-da. And I guess now maybe we do need to take that stand so we don't get killed, I guess. But that's not what we need to teach, especially not our youth. People need to take charge of their own actions, their behaviors, and their rights. You have the right, and that's what we need. That's my new hashtag, you have the right.
That's right. And we can't continue to allow them to sweep what they do to us under the rug. I mean, it's been going on for years. I mean, if we continue to turn the other cheek, you know, well, just don't say none, saying that's an isolated event when it's going on all mm-hmm. over the world. I mean, I don't think people understand what they're really saying. When something is isolated, it's just in one part. This is going on all over the world, all over the
right.
all over these countries, even in Africa. It's going on everywhere. So we can't no longer let our fear be our guide. We have to stand
every
up.
Day.
If we want, mm-hmm. if we want our children to survive, our grandchildren to survive, we can no longer sweep things under the rug. We can no longer keep our head bowed. We can no longer say yes or massa. You know what I'm saying? We have to stand up
yeah.
for our life, because it's just not a saying, Black Lives Matter. It's real. To me, it's
yeah.
real. Black people lives do matter. Black men lives matter. My children lives matter.
And people often say, you know, I hate to hear when people say all lives matter. We know that. We know that. That's why we have to say Black Lives Matter, because people are not acknowledging and respecting our lives as they do other people. So I hate when people try to take away our new hashtag, Black Lives Matter, because when I say it, that's what I mean. I already know. I know all lives matter. Do you know? That's the reason for the hashtag, Black Lives Matter. So, again, to at some point wipe out our own fears and also get a little bit educated and open our eyes into what's happening around us. You know, it's great to be politically correct, but sometimes, because politics are not always working in our favor, we have to throw that shit out the window. And we cannot be politically correct. We have to be radical. We have to be radical. We have to be outrageous. We have to have people open their mouths saying, what the hell are they doing? Because if we don't, things are not going to change.
Exactly, because in society, they always try to get people off track. We already know. I mean, let's exercise our common sense. Of course, we already know all lives matter. But society
right.
doesn't think Black lives matter. So since we're the same colors here, me and Keithlyn, and the people that this is happening to in our community are the same color as us, we have to keep saying that we matter, so we can matter just as much as a white person, as an
exactly.
Asian.
Exactly. And you know what? One of the reasons that me and Charity decided to talk about this, and because we don't want to, we know what's going on in society, and we don't want to beat people on, over the head with the same message, or even to talk about it like we're just talking about it to complain, because that's not our stance. Our stance is to enlighten and also empower people to do something about things. That's the whole purpose of the show. But it was a young man in New York. His name is Khalif Browder, and he was sent to jail for 3 years. He spent 3 years in jail. For a crime that eventually, guess what, it got dismissed. By the time he got his court date, after being in jail for 3 years, when he got there, he's like, oh, okay, don't worry about it, it's been dismissed. This young man was abused physically, probably sexually, by not only police, not only the correctional officers in the facility, but also the other inmates. He was on Rikers Island. They have videos that show this young man being beat up. His story actually was aired on CNN about a week and a half ago. And, the crime that was committed, when I heard the crime, it made me basically cry, because the crime was he supposedly stole a backpack that he always, you know, denied doing. So this young man spent 3 years of his life from 16 to 19 incarcerated. He didn't graduate. He didn't go to prom. He didn't get to have those experiences, which he said from his own mouth. And after that show aired on CNN, that Saturday, he killed himself. He committed suicide. So my thing is, like, how could someone be in jail for 3 years? What about your right to a speedy trial? Do you think that would have happened to a young white man? Rich or not, having money or not, they wouldn't have done that to a gentleman of that shade. And so it just hurt our hearts that this is what's happening to our citizens, to our brothers and sisters all across the country. And we need to do something about it. If only we talk about it and it has people being aware, I feel a little bit better about it, acknowledging these people and the lives that have been lost.
Definitely. And there are things that you can do just right from your home. You don't have to go to these different states and protest, which I would recommend that you do that, you know, be involved, be present. But there are things that you can do to put pressure on people or in situations like this, like send a letter to their state senate or send a letter to a judge. If a hundreds of thousands or millions of people send letters out, just let them know that you are aware of what's going on. You haven't forgotten that person. It'll put pressure on them to make a move.
Right. And another thing that you could do is, I say get involved. If there's an advocacy group around you that you want to protest with, or even write letters in a group form, like you could start your own advocacy group and say, you know, this Saturday we all going to write letters, or get as many people in your family to write letters. The other thing you can do, and which I try to do, is volunteer with young people. Young people, they are our future. We know these are our next generation. If you can't influence the politics and the whole society now, which is quite difficult, you can influence a teenager, a young person that's growing up. Give them the insight. Give them the knowledge. Give them the motivation or the encouragement to do the right thing. And then also, if you're a parent, raise your child in the way that you know is right, where they're going to be able to go out in the future and make a change and become a leader.
Definitely. And, you know, we have to – it used to be back in the days where – you know, it took a whole village to raise a child. Now all I'm hearing people say is, oh, that's not my responsibility, da-da-da-da-da. I mean, if it's not your responsibility, then who's? I mean, it's our responsibility to help each other out. We are our brother's keeper. I mean, if God had just left us lost like we were and claimed that we weren't his responsibility, the world would be in a much worse shape than it is now. So if you see a young person in the community where you live at and they don't seem to have parents that around them all the time, spending time with them, what would it hurt you to invite them along with you and your children to go to the movies or go to the park, something that wouldn't cost you any money? If you go on to take your children to volunteer somewhere you know is fun, why can't you take them along and be a good example for them?
I agree.
Show them what, you know, a parent spending time with their children looks like.
What it looks like, what it feels like. Because people don't want to acknowledge the truth when it isn't affecting their household. Someone told me that. And I believe that. If it's not in my house, it's not true, it's not real, it's nothing I need to work on. But, and it's not true until that person is your son or your daughter out on the street being harassed, being beaten to death, or being killed. And then it's your problem. But we still are in a village. I'm in a village.
Exactly.
I don't know.
Exactly.
We're in a village, and we have to act accordingly.
Exactly, because I know, you know, everyone, once they say it, and it hits home, then they want everybody involved. I see it all the time. Oh, well, that's not my child, so I'm not going to be wasting my time. But then when their child is missing or when their child get arrested, they want to take up an offering. And, you know, they want everybody to help them looking for their child. Okay, we all need to do that for each other. Don't just pop up out the blue when something happened to your child. Your child isn't the only life that matters. All of our children matter. It's too many children around here wandering lost aimlessly. Because no one cares, because everybody has this mentality that child isn't my responsibility. In my old neighborhood that I just moved from, I know I fed at least 6 kids. It may be more because it was rotating different children coming to my apartment all the time because they didn't have food in their house. Now, you know, as much food as you throw away, you can give some food to some starving children. Children that live next door to me have all their parents.
I didn't have
one of them wasn't working. But I used to tell them to come over at my house and help me out, and I would give them something to eat. I mean, you throw a lot of food away. You waste it. Why can't you give it to somebody else? Just like I keep food and sometimes clothes even in my trunk. And if I pass by a homeless person, I'll give it to them. I pull over. These are little things that you can do that doesn't even go out your way. As you carry it on as your everyday business, you can stop. Clothes that you would give to Goodwill or you were just going to throw out in the garbage. You can just pop them in your trunk. You see somebody, you pull over, you give it to a lady in her church, and you see them walking.
Yep. And the one last thing, because this 30 minutes seems to go so rapidly, and we're going to be rapid, is that I think it's also important to pay attention to our own emotions and what's happening with all these stories, because, you know, it's been several times that I walk alone, and I cry because I feel so overwhelmed, and I feel so powerless, you know, about change. But, you know, we want to encourage people to minimize the amount of things that you read and see. Sometimes we have to remove ourselves from social media, whether it be the TV or going onto your phone, onto your social website, because sometimes those things are overwhelming and they really, you know, bring up a lot of feelings that sometimes you can't deal with. And you're walking around angry or being mean-spirited to people who look different, which may or may not be a bad thing. Just kidding. But we're going to wrap today, and we just want you guys to, you know, always remember.
Oh, yes. Thank you for tuning in, people. Always remember that We love you. God loves you. And if no one believes in you, God believes in you, and believe in yourself.
Thank you, guys. We'll see you next
Bye.
Monday.
Keith one. Hello?